We've been talking for the last few weeks about identity, and after last week's sermon, several people asked me theological questions about the topic, so I'm going to give you a theological sermon today. So just fair warning, this gets kind of deep and complex and very intellectual, so either prepare for your nap or prepare to lean forward and pay attention. So identity is one of the three core spiritual issues that everyone deals with in life. The three are identity, meaning, and purpose, or as I phrase the three spiritual questions, who am I, what should I do, and why does it matter? The spiritual questions of identity have two different dimensions. So first, there's a personal dimension where we ask questions like, who am I, what does it mean to be me? And then we have a corporate dimension of identity where we ask questions like, who are we? What does it mean to be human? The personal dimension of identity starts us thinking about theological questions such as, is there a stable self within us, or is the permanent self merely an illusion? How am I the same or different from other people? Was I created for a reason, like a lesson that I needed to learn or a service that I could offer others? The corporate dimension of identity invites theological questions like, are human beings naturally good or sinful or neutral? Are human beings a special creation, or are we the unplanned outcome of the same natural forces that produced the rest of the universe and other living things? In the context of this church, as you prepare to elect a search committee and then enter a year of searching for your next settled minister, exploring the issues of identity will be helpful in answering the question, who are we as a congregation? What is the character of this church? What are your unique gifts and challenges? What do you care about? What are you working on? How is this congregation the same or different from other Unitarian Universalist congregations? And what kind of minister would be a good match for the congregation that you are? So who are you? And we'll turn to looking at the corporate dimension of identity next month. So 2 weeks ago, we started looking at the personal dimension of identity by considering the aspects of our identity that are given to us. So we are born into particular bodies, we have particular parents, we come with a genetic inheritance, we're born at a particular place and a particular time. Part of who we are, therefore, is defined for us. It comes to us by our internal biology and also by an external culture that opens some doors for us and closes other doors to us. And then last week, I offered the balance to that deterministic view of the self by saying that we are formed by outside forces, but also are self-forming by our own free choices. I offered the phrase, a victor of circumstance, because we can use our skills and creativity, our wisdom and our courage to rise above the limitations of our biological and cultural destiny. So who are you? Well, partly you get to choose. So think for a minute, what did you receive from your ancestors? And what did you receive from the culture that you were born into? And what part of that inheritance did you receive gratefully, that you've made the most of, that you cling to now, and that you bring with you into the present and the future as a part of who you are? Like those fairy tales where the hero begins their journey by being given from some wise old person three gifts that they put into a basket and take with them on the adventure, and then those three gifts turn out to be exactly the things that are required to meet the goal. So what are the gifts that were given to you? And then what if who you are today comes from within yourself? Because heroes in fairy tales depend on their own gifts also, their own strength, their own cunning, and so on. So what if you today is a response to some internal impulse that you discovered within yourself on your own, and then you nurtured on your own, and as you developed, perhaps even became a stranger to your own parents in some way? How much of the you that you are today is the person that you were created to be by others, and how much of you today is the person that you were meant to be, that you have self-created by your own life choices. But here then is the deeper theological question. If part of who you are is a self-invention based on what you choose to be, why did you choose what you chose? If your choosing was in response to some internal impulse, where did that impulse come from? Because wouldn't that internal impulse also have been given to you by biology or the culture that you found yourself born into? Can there really be some part of ourselves which is self-determined, independent from any forces outside? Can there be something in us that is somehow free from prior conditioning, where we received maybe a push from our parents and our early circumstances, but then we made our own way, that they gave us a general direction, but then we chose to narrow that down to our own path? Is there something essential that is really you, that allows you to choose for yourself, to walk a free path, to be, as we sang in our opening hymn, searchers in the soul's deep yearnings? Look inside your souls, the kindling of the hearth fire pilgrims knew. Find a spirit, always restless. Find it in each mind and heart. When you look in your mind and heart, when you look for that soul, that carrier of personal identity, what do you find? Is there anything to find? So you may have heard me talk before about what I think are the three elements of a complete faith. They are beliefs, values, and actions. So usually when folks think about religion and spirituality, they focus only on the belief element of the faith. We, especially in the Western cultures, we ask, what do you believe? And let people define their religion by, do you believe in God? What do you believe about Jesus? Do you believe in reincarnation? Or do you believe in heaven and hell? Or do you believe that consciousness ends when the body dies? So we ask, what do you believe? And I also include in this first one of the three elements of faith, the belief part, those facts about the world that we don't think of as beliefs, but that we say that we actually know. Because faith really shouldn't be just this metaphysical corner of reality where God and Jesus and the afterlife exist. Faith really should include everything that we believe about the earth and about the sun and men and women and the history of the world. Much of that knowledge comes to us through the tool of science. So beliefs are the totality of our worldview, everything we think we know about reality. When we look out at the world, we see both those things that we say we know objectively and also those things that we have to surmise based on our intuitions and feelings. And so beliefs are our total description of reality. But beliefs are not all of faith. It's just the first of three elements. From our description of reality, we then derive a set of values. Because the world is the way it is, we say, to us, then certain principles become important. Like life, for instance, would be an important value you would derive from looking around the world. Or you might value peace or justice, love, creativity, education. Your values will differ depending, for instance, on whether you think that this is the only life that you get, or whether you think that there's a heaven and a hell waiting for you, or whether you believe you'll be reincarnated. So your beliefs then lead you to different values. Your values will differ depending on whether you believe that human beings are a special creation, or whether you believe that human beings are an accidental outcome of the same natural forces that created the rest of the world and all other forms of life. And then finally, from our values, we choose actions in the world that further our values and that attempt to make them more and more manifest in our lives in the world. If we value peace, we will work for peace. If we value love, we will seek love. What you do with your religion is at least as important as what you say about your religion. That's why the glaring hypocrisy of evangelical Christians who support President Trump, despite his personal immorality and his policies, his anti-Christian policies on things like immigration and race, is so mind-boggling. So faith isn't merely beliefs. It's not holding beliefs intellectually. Faith is also the values that flow from your beliefs and the actions that you take in line with those values. And that's true for the personal spirituality of everybody in this room, as well as for the people who are following some name brand religion. Your faith is your beliefs, your values, and your actions. Okay, now one more little detail to that picture. Faith is beliefs that lead to values that lead to actions. But where do our beliefs come from? Our beliefs, which are everything that we hold to be true about the world, our description of reality, are formed through our experiences in life. We believe reality is the way we believe it is because we experienced it that way, or we had an experience of being taught about it in school, or we had an experience of listening to our parents or reading a particular book. Our beliefs flow from our experience. So now this next part might sound a little familiar. So some of the experiences in our world are given to us by the body we are born into and the particular time and place that we grew up in. Some of our experiences are determined for us by our parents and by what's available in the culture around us. And then some of our experiences, and increasingly as we get older, we choose for ourselves. We decide to have certain experiences and we seek them out. We choose to take this class in high school or to hang out with those friends or to watch that movie. Our experiences are both given to us and also chosen by us. So if you think back to that line of faith, you start with experiences leading to beliefs, leading to values, leading to actions. And then at the bottom, you see that your actions create a new set of experiences for yourself. So the bottom of the faith line then circles back to the top, and it starts again. Experiences, beliefs, values, actions, experiences. Beliefs, values, actions, experiences. The faith line begins with the experiences that are given to us. No one imagines themselves to be self-created as an infant, and no one imagines that the world they discover around them when they start to discover it was created by themselves. At first, everything is given to us. We emerge entirely from the world. Everything was already here before we arrived, and we are entirely the product of that givenness. But the faith line ends with experiences also. So at the end of the line of the given to us self of world and biology and culture that leads to valuing some principles in the world more highly than others and then making choices about the kind of world we want to create for ourselves and others, we then arrive again at experience. So experience then becomes the essential part of this loop. Experience of one reality leading to a new experience and then another in an endlessly recreating series. Experience after experience. Experience in this moment creating the experience of the next. New experiences created from the what was, the reality of what actually is, even if it was only partially understood, and then informed by our collective hopes, desires, cares, and concerns, and longings, which are our values, then creating in the next moment, through our choices and actions, a new reality that starts the cycle again. In this metaphysics, which is called process theology, there is a real world which is constantly ending and then being recreated moment by moment. And there are free choice makers who are guiding the ongoing recreation of the world, meaning you and me and every other conscious individual, as we apply our personal values to shape what comes next, moment by moment. The irreducible ground of this metaphysics is not material things like hard atoms, but moments of conscious experience. A moment that begins with the givenness of the past, experienced by a conscious individual, such as all of us, but other forms of life as well, to varying degrees, applying a value judgment to give a direction, then making a free choice to create the next moment. At the moment that you became a conscious individual, you joined this community of co-creators of ongoing reality. At first, your choices were limited and were highly influenced by the givenness of reality that you felt around you. You remember your experience as children being pushed around. But gradually, a stronger and stronger self emerged, and your choices became more independent and more powerful. You exercised a freedom always latent in you, and your choice-making became more powerful. You became more and more responsible for creating your own life and shared greater responsibility for what we all choose to make of this world that we share and co-create together. Because I believe this description of reality that includes radical freedom and a constantly flickering world that flows and changes from one moment to the next, I strongly value freedom and individual responsibility because I believe that reality is created by the combined choices of billions of individuals. I believe that my actions must not be just for my own health and happiness, but that I must use my choices for the good of all. So, what am I, to answer the identity question? I am not a lasting, permanent self, but like all reality, I am a constantly flickering moment of conscious experience, constantly changing from one moment to the next, influenced by the past, but not determined, recreating much of who I was, but always enjoying the opportunity for an ever new creation as well. I am not a passive participant in a predetermined reality. I am a conscious individual with great shared power to shape our world. My reality is capable of transformation, and it does transform in part by my choices. As reality changes, so too do my beliefs, and then my values and my actions. There are better and there are worse possibilities for the future. And my value judgments and the actions that I take in response to those values moves the future in purposeful direction. With Thoreau, I wish to live deliberately. I wish to learn what life has to teach and not, when I come to die, discover that I have not lived. I wish to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to know it by experience. And then to let those experiences create a new reality, to leave behind the old reality when necessary, to learn new values, to re-examine my judgment of what could be the next best possible future based on what really is, then to add my choice, to take my action, to create a new world with all conscious individuals participating, and then each new moment step together into what we choose to make. Thank you for listening.